AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. Grain trade kind of limped into the three-day weekend, and I know this weekend doesn't carry as much market swagger as other holiday weekends, but who knows? A change in the South American weather forecast, that could dump a bunch of volatility back into the market when trade restarts next week.
Live from the final moments before the long weekend repose from Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Terry Lynn from the Lynn Group. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis. Yeah, man. If this forecast for this weekend is right, it feels like we're talking a lot about the weather right now, but I think we probably should be. I got a text over the lunch hour from a buddy down in Mississippi. Okay. And I'm not saying that he's old, but he's older than me. Okay. And his forecast for Monday morning is 1 degree.
Ooh.
Okay.
1 degree. And just the one.
1 degree. Okay. Yeah. And he says that he doesn't recall ever having a low of 1 degree where he is located.
Where's he located?
Down in Mississippi.
Mississippi?
Yeah.
1 degree?
Yeah.
You're not saying by the Mississippi, as in by the river, maybe, right?
No.
That could be clear up in Minnesota.
Right. And by the Mississippi, in the upper Mississippi, the lows over the weekend are supposed to be like 20 below.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah, we're sending them some cold water. And some of those icy conditions on the river, it's the Illinois River, the Mississippi River, it's causing some disruptions on shipments down to the Gulf. It's one of the reasons, it's another reason that the market is asking, can we handle the export load that we put in place? Okay, it's a fair question. It's a conversation that we're going to have with Terry Lynn coming up here in just a little bit. It's a legit question. Can we handle the pace?
Mm-hmm. All right.
So, yeah. Anyway, we've got a three-day weekend for the markets. Just to remind everybody, it's coming right at us. And like I said in the open, this one doesn't carry as much market swagger as some of the other. It's not the 4th of July weekend or even the Labor Day weekend. Labor Day weekend can bring some fireworks into the market as well. But we can't forget that this is kind of like the 4th of July weekend. Even a little bit later than that down in South America. So there are some things that we'll be watching for over the weekend and what it might do to the markets after an extended closed period. All right, man, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, wheat futures were a leader to the upside in the grain markets, but in reality, March soft red wheat posted an inside trading day with a low range open and a high range close. That means the front month soft red winter wheat contract could not push through resistance at yesterday's high, marking the third consecutive session with a lower daily high. Chart watchers are quick to point out that support near 625 in March soft red was reinforced this week. Underlying support to wheat at the end of the week were expectations that Russia will instate export taxes on wheat beginning Monday. July hard red winter wheat was 6.25 cents higher, 6.25¾. July soft red firmed 1¾ cents to 6.30. September spring wheat 1/4 cent lower, 6.41¼. Chip.
Yeah, we've got the range narrowing up in this wheat market right now. I think it, and you can't say that the volatility is completely drained away from that market, but it is calming down a bit. On the week, we saw July SRW futures down just 2 cents, HRW July contract down 5.5, and the September spring wheat contract lost 3¾ cents. Not too bad.
USDA this morning announced the sale of 195,000 metric tons of corn to Costa Rica. and the sale of nearly 116,000 tons of corn to Guatemala. Both are traditional buyers of U.S. corn, but purchases by these two countries are usually smaller than the 100,000 metric ton threshold required to report sales into the daily reporting system. The fact that both countries got aggressive with purchases this week after USDA's supply and demand report only reinforces ideas that USDA shot too low with its corn export estimate. March corn futures this week posted a new contract high on Tuesday ahead of that S&D report. March corn futures today, 2.25 cents lower, 538.75. May corn gained 3.25 to 536.5. Dece corn, 448 at the close, down 3.75 cents. Chip.
You know, why don't you and I find out how quick those guys down at Costa Rica want that corn? Maybe we could hand deliver for them.
Perhaps some first-hand reporting is in order.
Yeah, you know, take it down there over the weekend. That would I can free things up if we're going to Costa Rica.
What better goodwill ambassadors could there be for American agriculture than you and me, brother?
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine that showing up? Jeepers, crime. And they'd say, well, these guys loco. Hey. the trends that we're seeing in this corn market right now, obviously that move, big move to the upside, big move to the downside, a new high for the month, a new low for the month. It looked like we were going to have a big time downside reversal on the weekly chart. We didn't get it. And here we are now at the end of the week, March corn off 9.75 cents, Dece corn down just 3 cents.
Well, after volatility ramped up in the soybean market earlier this week, somebody pulled the plug on the market at the end of the week, with March futures trading in just a 15-cent range. March soybean futures also traded to a new February high early this week, and to a new February low yesterday before bouncing to close mid-range for the month. Traders in the week ahead will be watching weather for the two wet areas in Brazil. The 10-day forecast is still wet for those areas, which continues to delay bean harvest. Ideas the trend is opening the export window for U.S. beans will help to discourage selling interest. March bean futures 4.5 cents higher today, 1372. May beans up 4.5, 1371.25. Novi beans, 1173, down 1.25 today.
Yeah. Yeah. The trends that we're looking at again with this bean market, it was pretty encouraging this week, and it feels like the market has engaged in that acreage battle. On the week, the November contract gained 12 cents. The March contract was only up 5.25 cents. Yeah, I know that's a bear spread that's working there, but nonetheless, you got that strength in the new crop contract.
March cotton futures rallied sharply the first 2 days of the week and then fought to hold on to those gains into today's close. March cotton, 86 points higher at 87.27. December cotton up 11 points to 83.89. Feels like a big week for cotton, Chip.
Yeah, it was a big week for cotton. There's no doubt about it. The March contract up 453 points. That's a 5.47% increase in value. So big move for the cotton market.
Cash cattle trade was stubbornly locked to mostly steady levels, making it tough to work higher this week. But futures did get a breakaway move to end the week. February live cattle up 187.5 to 117.20. April cattle up 205 to close at 125.17.5. March futures a $1.70 higher, 140.85. Quickly, snout side. April lean hog futures closed well off session highs, but were still solidly higher on the day and sharply higher on the week. Speculation that China's resurfaced issues with disease in the hog herd means more pork demand from the country in the year ahead. February lean hogs 2.5 cents lower, $74 even. April hogs up 95 cents today, 85.20. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. On the week, April live cattle futures up $1.40. March feeder cattle futures up 257.5. That was a nice move in March feeders. And lean hog futures up $4.90 on the week. That's the big percentage mover on the week, up 6.1% for the lean hogs. All right, we're going to have a conversation with Terry Lynn coming up next right here on AgriTalk. When making corn herbicide applications, some growers choose to only apply partial rates rather than applying the full rate indicated on the label. Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, is here to tell us what the harm is in using that approach.
Yeah, this is really important. While applying partial rates may seem like a good way to cut costs, the truth is that it can significantly damage your ROI in the long run. This is because you're applying lower doses of herbicides that allow plants to withstand the application and survive, which can kickstart the process for tolerance and eventual resistance with these weed biotypes. The worst thing with this is that resistance typically goes unnoticed until at least 30% of weeds in the field are resistant, so it can persist and spread.
That's got to have an impact on corn growth, which eventually has an impact on yield, right?
Yeah, in addition to eventual resistance, cutting your corn herbicide rate can lead to more weed outbreaks, crop competition with weeds for nutrients like water and nitrogen, and ultimately decreased yield. Using full herbicide rates will not only be more effective in removing problem weeds, but it's also going to prevent weeds from developing new forms of resistance to that herbicide.
Okay, so which corn herbicide will give growers the best pre- and post-emergent coverage?
Yeah, Acuron corn herbicide has unmatched weed control. Better weed control equals higher yield potential. When used in a pre-emergent application at full label rates, Acuron lets you discover the extra bushels no other herbicide can, 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other corn herbicide.
Excellent, Steve. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre worth Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator. You can find it at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
All right, charging into the end of the week here. Thank you for joining us for today's second hour of AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory.
Yes,
got Davis Michelson with us. That's yes. Him. And we're going to have a conversation right now with Terry Lynn from the Lynn Group. Terry, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Hey, doing great, Chip. Thanks for having me. Always great to be here.
Man, I love it when you come on, the show, Terry. You've been involved in the markets for a long time. You bring some great experience into these conversations. And I don't want you to just think about this week, and I don't want you to just think about commodities. Think about the equities. Think about the treasuries. Think about energies. Think about the ag commodities. Throw those into your thoughts. And what do you make of how the markets have traded so far in 2021?
Well, it's been a year like no other, obviously, and these are big-time markets. And it's been a while since we've had a big-time market in the grains. And after a week like this, not just the markets act like they're a little bit tired, but I think everybody that's involved in these markets is feeling the effects. And that's just the where we're at in terms of these elevated prices. But no, you're right. In this big picture, a lot of things are changing, and there's a lot of reasons for that. And you know, if you go back to just the middle of last summer, it was a completely different outlook in terms of commodities and prices and where we were going. And we had just had our kind of our major shutdown initially from COVID, and demand was depressed. Prices were cheap. And you had a series of events that reduced world supplies at a time where demand was resurging back, probably led by China, I guess, with the recovery from African swine fever in addition to coming back from COVID. And that was the story all around the world. And suddenly we went from a world of too much of just about everything to all of a sudden things have gotten really tight, and it's done it dramatically. And so that has been the trade up until here, really kind of January in the grain markets, where we blew off. I wouldn't want to say blow off, but we met a near-term top at least in January with the January crop report. It was bullish. The market locked limit up in corn that day, tried to extend, couldn't do it, set back, gave you your first 50-cent correction. Came back here this week, made a new high, got a crop report that wasn't quite satisfactory to the bulls, and set back with another 50-cent correction. So our momentum, I think, in the grains has somewhat slowed here a little bit, and I think this time of year you can see that happen, particularly as some of the concerns of southern hemisphere crops have been alleviated. You've seen improvement in conditions there, stabilizing production ideas. And so it feels like we're taking a bit of a deep breath here.
Yeah.
And taking a bit of a pause. But at the end of the day, when you look at these balance sheets and the tightness, that still remains in place. And what's scary for me as I look forward and try to manage risk in this environment is what happens with the next issue, the next shoe to drop, so to say.
Yeah.
If you have an issue with safrinha corn down in Brazil in that growing season, which is just getting underway there after a delayed start. And what happens here in the U.S. if we encounter a hiccup? And the answer is that the price response would be dramatic in the grains because of where we are in terms of supply today, notably in the beans. But corn has continued to shrink its balance sheet too, and wheat somewhat quietly has been doing the same thing in the background. I kind of look in amazement, and you see almost this global inflationary trade that's in place here. You look at the crude oil market here today, nearly trading $60 a barrel, equities not far from all-time highs, and just all sorts of commodities that have picked up on this growing demand and relatively tighter supply. But then you also have trillions in stimulus dollars here in the United States that are going to be put to work. And so all of this has created some additional inflationary pressure that's helped kind of support these rallies as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The tightening of the balance sheet, Terry, it's been a development. I mean, we went through the dry weather in July and August, and it took a little more off the corn crop, a little bit off the bean crop, maybe more than what was anticipated at the time. The demand that has come to the marketplace, it's been a development. It wasn't just all at once. There's still plenty of questions out there about all of this. But, you know, I know that that farmers are their trust level with USDA numbers right now is about an all-time low. Do you think that's justified? Because this has been a realizing market. It's not like everybody 6 months ago was saying, I can't believe the corn prices aren't $5.50.
Sure. Yeah, it's been a dramatic turnaround, and certainly some of the adjustments that the USDA has made, and particularly on the quarterly stocks numbers, have been more dramatic than what they have done in the past, and certainly has a lot of people griping about it, and that is understandable. I don't want to talk down on the USDA because I think they overall do a tremendous job and provide a great service. Obviously, there are instances that are somewhat head scratching and can be argued. But for those that are involved in these markets, in the grain markets, whether you're a producer or a buyer or a broker, you're relying on the data being the best it can possibly be to make decisions that impact your career. And so any times that there's, it seems like there's a slip or something that the USDA isn't quite in sync with where the market is in reality, it's reasonable for the market, participants to be frustrated by that. It's the best we have to work with, and we just want to see them do a good job here and give us reliable data.
Yeah, boy, next week the USDA Annual Ag Outlook Conference or Forum is going on. Going to be a lot of attention on the 2021-22 projections that they're going to deliver, won't there be?
No doubt about it. That's one of the biggest shifts of the focus in the marketplace as we look out to new crop here and trying to get a sense of what the acreage mix is going to look like. If there's one surprise to me, it's that the new crop soybeans, the November bean contract, has not really done what I think it needs to in order to encourage sufficient acreage away from these other markets. And with the carryout being as tight as it is, I think I saw a survey today where the trade analysts are expecting a soybean planted acre number of just under 90 million. And it's unfortunately, that's not going to be the type of acreage, even if you have a decent yield, that's going to dramatically alter the balance sheet to where you can be comfortable again next year. It's going to be very similar to what we have this year with that type of projection going forward, unfortunately. And a big reason why the beans haven't been able to perform better is just the corn on a relative basis is a very attractive price to the farmer. Mm-hmm. When you have nearly $4.50 on the board on these corn, that plays very well. It's a nice margin, and farmers like to grow the corn, and it's tough to buy the acres away from that type of price. So while November beans may be eyed as the culprit here, it's equally on the December corn contract performing better on a relative basis that's been kind of limiting the bean ideas.
Right. Right. You know, the 120 million bushel bean carryover estimate and the 1.5 billion bushel corn carryover estimate for 2020-21, those are the carryover estimates that farmers are going to be looking at when they fill out their survey for the prospective planting report. So I wonder, Terry, if we're not out of time to influence what the acreage mix is going to be for 2021.
Well, you're exactly right. There is a clock that's ticking here, and it's running out quickly. And you know, at this point, a lot of producers have their mind made up roughly what their mix is going to be like. And there's a lot of minds that don't really change very much from year to year either. But
right,
for those
right.
that can be changed, yeah, you're right. You're in the averaging month here for February, and plans have to be made, and there's a limit as far as what you can do at this point in terms of shifting acreage. There's only so much that certainly can be influenced at this relatively late stage in the game.
Yeah, yeah. And I bring up the prospective plantings report, and I know that it's just planting intentions and that intentions change, but that intentions number is the number that we work with for April, May, and for most of June until we get the June acreage report. So it's one of those benchmark numbers that we're going to be working with. And we get another one, the first benchmark number of the year for me anyways, coming next week from the annual Ag Outlook Forum there in D.C. for USDA. Okay, off to a great start in the conversation with Terry Lynn from the Lynn Group. Believe it or not, Terry, I want to come back. When we come back, I want to ask the question that I said that I was probably going to start with. What have you heard from the market? What message are you getting from the market since Tuesday's price action? Hey, everybody. Chip Flora here. I've got a great deal for you to tap into all the information at the 2021 Top Producer Summit. You don't have to travel. It's all online, and I'll pick up half the tab. That's right, because you listen to AgriTalk, Top Producer is working with us to take your fee from $150 down to $75. Use promo code AgriTalk when you register at tpsummit.com. It's a half-price deal only for AgriTalk listeners. Use promo code AgriTalk at tpsummit.com. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing today. Mexico's ban on GMO corn and glyphosate is likely to be challenged in court. The ITC rules blueberry imports are not causing serious injury to domestic producers. Mexico praised the decision. The American Blueberry Alliance said, nah, we're disappointed by that. Growing optimism about economic growth, forecasters cited the distribution of vaccinations and the prospect for additional fiscal relief from Washington as the reasons behind the brightening outlook. 75% of economists surveyed by the Wall Street Journal say a $15 minimum wage will cost the U.S. jobs. Political spending in the 2020 election totaled $14.4 billion, more than double the previous record. Jeez, give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. We're going to get back to the conversation with Terry Lynn here real quick. Before we do that, Davis, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Well, Chip, July hard red winter wheat was 6¼ cents higher, 6.25¾. July soft red up 1¾ cents, 6.30. March corn futures 2.25 cents lower, 5.38¾. May corn gained 3¼ to 5.36½. March bean futures 4.5 cents higher, 13.72. May beans up 4.5 to close at 13.71¼. December cotton firmed 11 points to 83.89. On the livestock side, April cattle gained 2.05 to close at 125.17½. March feeders 1.70 higher, 140.85. And April lean hogs gained 95 cents to close at 85.20. That's your quick market recap, Chip.
All right.
Back to you.
Thanks, buddy. Terry Lynn with the Lynn Group is our guest today. Terry, we talked longer term, broader picture in the last segment. I want to shorten things up here a little bit and get very specific in the price action that we've seen since Tuesday's report. What's it telling you? What's the message there?
Sure. I think as you look at the markets here and you step back and you can see that our momentum has slowed. We had this extended period where it seemed like we were just a straight up moonshot for corn and bean prices, and we were. And you can tell since the start of the new year, particularly for beans and in corn this month, we had the help from the Chinese business around that gave us new highs here early in the week ahead of the crop report. But you get the sense that we've entered a new phase in these markets, and I think that is somewhat normal. We had the strong demand that drove us through the fall with the bean market, the bean program, and that shifted over to corn here of late. But we're at a point in time now where we've seen the demand kind of play out, kind of what our expectations are going to be here for the year. It's very strong. It's very bullish, but it's kind of old news. The markets are very long. We're at a point now where Southern Hemisphere crops are getting a little bit more baked in. There's less uncertainty there. And so it's not unusual, I think, for a market at this phase to see a little bit more two-sided action where you can see some liquidation of some of this length on strength, and the market can set back and give you some breaks like we didn't have there for an extended period. And so I think what the market showed you this week also, importantly, was that when we do have a setback here, we're not about to capitulate and completely roll over. These markets are not necessarily done. There is strong demand underneath the markets, and that's what we did confirm once again this week. But to get up and extend these rallies the way we have, what I would say is the next phase of a bull market, if you're going to have a next phase here, you need a new driver. And most likely that would have to come in the form of a Southern Hemisphere crop issue late in the growing season, possibly the safrinha corn crop, or again, U.S. summer weather. And in the meantime, the markets can trade around a little bit more than what we've been accustomed to doing. We're just doing it at higher price levels and elevated price structure in these markets that more reflect our balance sheets today. Mm-hmm. And that does create a more volatile trade, a more difficult trade, but it can be more two-sided here for a moment until the market gets a new driver.
Okay. That corn export estimate that we got from USDA, 2.6 billion bushels, we've already gathered additional evidence that would suggest that that estimate is too low. But are they? Do you think USDA is being conservative with that estimate just simply because they're out of concern that we can't ship everything that's already been sold?
Well, I do believe they're conservative on their export number. As far as the reasoning, I couldn't tell you. But if you look what we have shipped through the first 6 months of the marketing year, between in corn and beans, we've shipped about 71 million tons through the first 6 months of the marketing year of corn and beans alone. Okay. As far as what's on the books for the balance of the year, we have open sales of combined corn and beans of about 45 million tons. Okay. So I'm not factoring in the cotton or the wheat, and there's more mm-hmm. business to talk about, and we're going to sell more corn too. But my point is that it might be stretching our logistics some, but we have the ability to ship out that type of volume.
Yep. Good. I love that. Great answer. That's putting numbers to the answer right there, Terry. That was well done. Okay. The last segment, you said that November soybeans haven't done enough yet. We talked about the ticking clock, but what should the bean market do, the new crop bean market do, to encourage more acres? What would it take, do you think?
Well, we have the new crop bean to corn ratio today settled 2.61%. We have gotten as high as about 2.64 early in January, and that's just not sufficient. And you know that's just purely in its relationship to corn. Mm-hmm. But if I'm going to judge it off of the ratio, where does it need to get to in order to start taking that acreage from, you know, a 90 million type of number in beans to a 92 or something like that?
Yeah.
I would say you need to probably take it to 2.75, if not 2.8, because you need to almost shock the producer into making this change at this point. We're halfway through February, and the market's just been too lackadaisical to force that type of shift.
Great, great explanation. Okay. The conversations that you have with clients, how have they changed? I don't want to go all the way back to when the markets were making a bottom last summer. Let's just go back to November, okay? Or no, you know what? Let's go to October when guys were climbing in the combine cab and you were talking to them about what they need to do for risk management. How has the conversation changed now?
Well, I think at this stage is there's a lot more focus on what new crop prices are showing you and how to handle that, where you've got a big number in front of you and we're only in February days. And from a producer perspective, you have to be looking at your operation as a business and what type of profitability works for you. And in the case of corn in particular, when you have a new crop price near 450 on the board, that's an attractive level, and you have to be proactive here and at least get started on marketing some grain because you know, it's an old saying, obviously, but again, yeah, if this is your worst sale here at near 450 a bushel, that's a great place to get started. It doesn't mean you need to market half your crop or all your crop, but you should get a nice healthy percentage here because that's a number that that really does work, and that's nice profitability that is not guaranteed to continue to be there, whatever your opinion on is in the market. Just like how in August when we were trading 330 corn, you know, things change. And you have to account for that in your marketing decisions.
Right, right. Do you want to maintain some flexibility with that marketing? So what, in other words, if you're making a forward cash contract sale for fall 21 delivery, do you want to maintain some upside price potential with a call option or something like that?
Yes, and that's you know, our personal bias is that we are still friendly as far as the market structure goes. The fundamental story is still there, and we want to participate in the upside. And so, yes, if you are marketing some new crop, you can go and purchase a call or a call spread as a defined risk position to continue to participate. What you can't do is sit on your hands and do nothing and let an opportunity come and perhaps pass you by. But if you are going to market something and you want to re-own it, we would absolutely encourage that. And again, doing that with a defined risk position in a call or a call spread is a great approach.
What are you looking for from these grain markets over the next 3 months? And you know what? No, I went too far there. Don't go 3 months because, I mean, spring weather is going to be, is going to have such a dramatic influence on what prices are going to be doing in 3 months. At least I hope it is. But just over the next couple of months in the demand period yet.
Sure, sure. Well, yes, obviously weather and planting conditions, that's going to be a major force in our markets. But I think also that's very unique to this year is we're going to see the COVID vaccinations roll out further and more of the population begin to open up. And I think that's a strong tie to this inflationary trade that we have going forward in that it's going to jumpstart demand in a lot of sectors that have been struggling. And you know the restaurant industries and travel and tourism and but demand for everything is going to benefit as we continue to open up. And so I think as we go forward into the spring, that's going to be a steady constant that's going to continue to add better demand, consumptive demand to the marketplace.
You know, when you started talking about that, Terry, I opened up the S&P chart, the S&P 500 chart, to take a look at it there. Didn't get to a new high today, but got to a new high close. Pretty impressive.
Yes, yeah. So there's a lot of optimism, even
yep.
though, you know, we don't have where we want to be today. But I think the direction of where we're going, the trends and the numbers, the reality that the vaccine is here and people are getting the shots, things are going to improve. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, and we're headed the right direction.
Yeah. WTI 5961, March contract. That energy complex is finding some strength too, isn't it?
You bet. And so the expectations for yep. energy demand, and that flows right into the grains through the ethanol sector, where there's an optimistic outlook for ethanol demand going forward as well. And of yep. course, that ties into corn, which it's been a struggle here since last spring.
Yeah. Yeah. All I was doing right there, Terry, was just checking off the markets that I check every time somebody says to me, watch what's going on with the vaccines, watch what's going on there. Because that consumer confidence is going to have so much impact on our markets in the second half of the year. There's no question about it. Man, I enjoyed this, Terry. Thank you.
Well, hey, thanks for having me on again. And Chip, have a nice weekend, okay?
You bet. You bet. Stay warm, Terry. That's Terry Lynn from the Lynn Group. Okay, when we come back, Davis and I will wrap up this week's final hour of AgriTalk.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Man, that was a fun conversation with Terry.
It was.
That was good. Yeah. That was good.
Before we talk about it, I feel like I need to serve our listeners just a little bit. Because there might be a tendency to panic at this stage of the game. All right? Valentine's Day is seriously right around the corner. So here are some do's and don'ts. Quickly, perhaps just show her your marketing plan. There's nothing quite as sexy as a dude with a cohesive marketing plan. And if you don't have one, ask her to help you build one as you sip a warm cup of cocoa. As an added benefit, you can be assured her plan will be right. If you don't think so, just ask her.
Just ask her.
Now, no matter what Justin Timberlake tells you, be wary of what you put in boxes, people. This is a big one. And while it might seem like a quaint, fun idea, do not replace the furniture in the home with cutesy stacked hay bales. She will not think this is cute. The same is true of cow pie coasters, horse apple doorknobs, and homemade grease gun lamps. And this one I offer up every year. Make sure and have the kids get out the construction paper and crayons or markers. Make Valentine's cards for their beloved mother. And I would add, make sure you help clean up the mess when they are done. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
You know, the thing with those cow pie coasters.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, at this time of the year, you can make a terrible, terrible mistake and just assume that they're dried out.
Right. Yes.
You bring them in, they start to warm up a little bit. All of a sudden, your coffee cup is sinking down in there a little.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it gets a little messy to clean up.
I'm speaking from experience on most of these, actually. That's how I know. That's how I know it's good advice.
It's how I know.
November beans not buying acres. Farmers like to plant corn, and the clock is ticking and running out quickly on acreage.
Yeah, yeah. Really interesting. So it got me looking around. That whole conversation got me looking. I was going to try to do the math during the five minute break there, but
careful,
I don't have to because I found what I was looking for on the Auburn Agency Crop Twitter feed. It's at AA Crop. Ruth Gurdes. Remember Ruth? Crop insurance.
Oh, hello, Ruth. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is her agency. Went over there and I didn't realize that they were doing this, and I follow them, and I don't know how I've missed it this week, but they've been keeping a running tab on what the average is for December corn and the average for November soybeans. So today, December corn closed at 448 and three quarters. The average for the month of February is $4.51.
Not bad.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, 450, it's like Terry was talking about. It's one of those benchmark numbers. I mean, it used to be $4. Geez, just get me to $4. You know I'm going to plant more corn if I can get to $4. I don't know if that is, if $4 generates as much enthusiasm as it once did, but 4.5 does, man. 4.5 does. So it's really interesting how that is, it will help that 451 average that we're looking at in February. If we end up close to 450, that is going to help corn hold on to acres. I just don't think there's any question about it. Mm-hmm. Now, soybeans, have they done enough? That was one of the questions that we were asking. Today, beans, Novi beans closed at 1173. The average for the month is actually below that at 1166. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah. It's not 12 and a quarter. It's not 1250. I think that's kind of beans equivalent to 4.5. That 12 and a quarter, 1250 is the number that really gets them going. Oh, hey man, it's time to reduce my trips to town, keep some miles off the truck, grow fewer bushels, but still have good revenue. That's what that 12 and a quarter, 1250 feels like. 1166 for the average that we've got on the spring price right now. I'm kind of in Terry's camp on this, but you know, Davis, I've been treating corn as if it was the leader in this grain market all along, and I keep hearing from some of the other analysts on the show that say, well, beans have been the leader. I think beans have been an underperformer.
See, I make that a 2.58 price ratio. 2.5.
Oh, 2.58. Okay. Okay, there you go.
451 and 1166, correct?
Yes. Yes, yeah. That's right.
2.585.
I'm checking my math on this right now. The current is 2.61, so the average is below the current. And I'm not going to argue with what Terry said about where it needs to be to really, you know, kind of sex up soybeans a little bit and, make some growers interested in moving those acres over. I don't know. Interesting. Okay. 6 to 10 day outlook, February 18th through the 22nd. This, of course, is from the National Weather Service. We've still got the below normal temperatures across most of the Midwest. Southern Minnesota below normal, southern South Dakota below normal, Wisconsin below normal, Michigan, and all points to the south of that. We've got some normal temperatures coming into North Dakota, northern South Dakota, and northern Minnesota. Montana's in there as well. So that's a hint that it's starting to come our way. We've got mostly below normal precipitation February 18th through the 22nd. You got to get over to the far eastern Corn Belt, eastern Indiana, Ohio, Michigan for the above normal precipitation out there. Then when we flip over and take a look at the 8 to 14 day,
Yes,
there's some relief coming February 20th through the 26th. Above normal temperatures expected in North Dakota, South Dakota, eastern Nebraska, Minnesota, western Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, and normal temperatures across the rest of the Corn Belt.
Sounds like Speedo weather to me, brother.
Below normal precipitation in the western Corn Belt, above normal precipitation in the eastern Corn Belt. Man, what a week. You know what? It was such a busy week. We ought to like make next week like a 4-day week or something like that.
Let's do.
All right. Drop the gavel
on that.
We've got President's Day coverage coming for you on Monday.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.